Hello, everyone. This is Steve Martin. Welcome to Stars on Tap. Today is September 11, 2013, the 12th anniversary of 9/11, obviously. We're joined by Mike Panera, who was the guitarist for Blues Image and Ramatam, Alice Cooper, and Iron Butterfly. He wrote Ride, Captain, Ride with another guy, and he's done so much stuff, and there's so much to talk about. We'll go ahead and get started. Thank you, Mike, for your call. I appreciate it. How are you today?
Very good, Steve. How's everything going down there?
Well, if it wasn't for the heat and the humidity and the electric coming on and off, we'd be all right. But we'll be all right.
Well, I'm out here at home on the beach outside of Los Angeles. It's about 76 degrees. I don't want to get you jealous now, but I want to tell you how beautiful it is out here in Southern California. It's all blue skies, nice breeze coming in off the ocean, and 76 degrees is just that's just perfect for a Florida boy like me, used to all that humidity and all that heat.
It's perfect for anybody. That's the perfect weather.
Yeah.
And after all you've done, you deserve a place like that to relax and stuff. You've traveled since 1969. That's amazing.
Oh, well, golly gee. You know, in 69, when we were on the road, we were all, before Ride, Captain, Ride hit, just before it hit, we were on the road touring with Hendrix and The Doors and Grateful Dead and people like that. And they had tour buses. We had a station wagon, you know, with feet hanging out the window. Smelly feet in your nose. But we loved it so much, we really didn't care about all that. And we traveled all around. And, you know, one minute we'd be in 90-degree weather, and the next day we'd have to be in Wisconsin or something, and it would be like below zero sometimes. So we had some extreme, drastic changes in weather back in the early days before we start flying around.
Sure. And that's hard on the body, too, taking those temperature changes as it comes like that. But, you know, You guys must have had one heck of a time. I mean, with Ride, Captain Ride coming along right after that, and just, you know, Iron Butterfly taking off the way it took off with that. And just give me an idea of your early years and the songs and the great bands and everything that were going on in those early years. Give me your thoughts on that, just quickly.
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that, because a lot of people, you know, will say, you probably don't remember anything about those days, right? It was so long ago, or you guys were on this, or you were on that. I said, no, I remember everything, because I loved it so much. But here's what happened with me, is when I grew up in Tampa, at about age 14, my dad handed me a guitar. Said, "Here, son, here's something to play with." And I took to it immediately. And while people were listening to Love Me Tender and Hound Dog, I was listening to Heartbreak Hotel and If You're Looking for Trouble, you know, by Elvis. I like the blues sound, and he's a great guitar player, James Burton. So I started playing, and I caught on real quick. Pretty soon, my band was the number one band in Tampa, and there was one place in Tampa in particular called the Clearwater Auditorium, where all the big stars, I mean the big, big stars played. And I went up to the guy that ran the place, the promoter, and I said, "You're probably, you know, doing pretty good here." He says, "Yeah, we're back, 2,000 people on Friday and 2,000 people on Saturday. I see we're doing good." I said, "Yeah, but you're doing one thing wrong." And there's this little 14-year-old kid talking to a promoter, and he says, "What am I doing wrong?" I said, "You're paying too much money for the acts." He said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, you see, I know the acts that are coming, they're backup bands. I know all these players because I study who the big session guys are. And these are the biggest session guys in New York. And to take them away from recording sessions where they're making so much money to come out on the road and travel and be out here, they're having to charge the artist quite a bit, and then that cost trickles down to you." He says, "Well, what would you have me do?" I said, well, why don't you get a house band that backs all the stars? They don't have to fly all their people down here. It saves them airfare, hotels, expenses. And again, that'll trickle down to the fans. You won't have to charge so much. So he said, yeah, and who might that cover band be, the house band be? I said, well, you want to listen to my band? And he started laughing at me. He said, I thought you were going to get to that. He says, I don't know, son. I said, well, look, let's do this. You've got Gene Pitney coming in 2 weeks. And he's known as a very fickle, very demanding star. He wants everything perfect because he is a genius, musical genius. And at that point, his big hit was Town Without Pity. And really heavy, like James Bond changes and chord changes and little riffs that had to be perfect. And so I said, my band will record a cassette tonight of Town Without Pity. You send it to Gene Pitney and tell him that we're willing to back him, and all the songs will sound this good. They'll be this perfect if he'd like to have us back him. He said, you got a deal. So he sent Gene Pitney the cassette. Gene Pitney called back and said, this band is perfect. Saved me a lot of money. I won't have to bring all these guys. Then the promoter says, well, that saves you money, it saves me money. That means I don't have to pay you so much, right? So that started off a chain of reaction that lasted that whole summer. And we played with some of the biggest stars of rock and roll of that time as their backup band. So there I am, 14, now I'm 15, and I'm backing up the Four Seasons, Fabian, Chubby Checker, the Coaster, I mean, you name it. And, all the kids at school all of a sudden, especially the big football players, they used to throw the food at us during food. Even though I was on the football team, all of a sudden now they're coming up and going, hey, pal, can you get us some tickets to that show you do on the weekends? And I said, wait a minute, aren't you the same guy that slung a piece of apple pie at me last week? Right away I started seeing the perks of rock and roll. And then after that happened, we went through the whole summer that way. And then we said, why don't we try something different? Let's go on the road. So at age 15 years old, God bless my mother and father, they gave me permission to go on the road from Tampa to Reno, Nevada. And the reason we went to Reno was because in the musicians' directory, the agents were listing that there's bands needed desperately in Reno. You know, we pay the highest and all this stuff. So I called one agent. And he said, yep, you get down here right now. I got work waiting for you. So these naive 15-year-old kids, with one guy being 16 so he could drive, and a U-Haul trailer, we headed from Tampa to Reno. When we got there, the guy says, oh, you guys, yeah, I remember talking to you. No, I don't need you anymore. You can go back home. To go back home, which used every penny we had in gasoline. And so he says, well, I don't know what to tell you. I got all the bands I need. He walked away. And we were just about to just break down when this beautiful little waitress came up. I'll never forget her name, Mary. And she said, you know, he does that to everybody. And the reason he does that is because he figures you'll come begging tonight and say, look, we'll play for nothing or hardly nothing if you'll hire us, because, you know, we got to have a hotel, booth. He does it all the time. But I'll tell you what, you guys can stay at my house. As long as there's no funny business, you can crash on my couch and on my floor. And we said, thank you, man, thank you. We were there about 3 days, Steve. And sure enough, the promoter called and said, hey, my number one band is supposed to play this weekend to a sold-out crowd here at the casino, the Golden Casino. Is not showing up. So you guys got your break. You can come. And we said, well, wait a minute now. We got our break. But what are you going to pay us? And then we got into all that. As it turned out, we blew the house away. They loved us. We became a very popular band in Reno, and we spent the summer in Nevada playing Reno and places like that. So did I have some stories to tell when I got back from summer vacation.
Well, nice.
Everybody's trading their war stories. And that really gave me the taste for traveling and for meeting people and getting different ideas about songs and stuff. But then I realized that if we were ever going to go anywhere, we were going to have to write some original material. We couldn't just play cover material all the time. You know, we were doing any good. So I sat down, I wrote an album, and one of the songs that I wrote was a blues song that everybody loved called Leaving My Troubles Behind. And so everywhere we go, they say, play Leave My Troubles Behind, play Leave My Troubles Behind. So we got to Miami, and we moved to Miami, and we opened up our own club because we didn't believe in drawing people in to drink alcohol and, you know, and all that stuff. We said, hey, you know, we're being used. Let's open our own place with soda pop and ice cream drinks and with the Grateful Dead Cherry Jubilee. We'll name them after the bands, and we thought we were real creative. So we leased a bowling alley that fit about 2,500 people and tore out all the lanes with our hippie friends back there right on Collins Avenue, right on the beach. Do you know where that is?
No, sir.
Okay, well, that is, Miami Beach, that's the main drag. That's where all the big hotels are, the Fountain Blue and all that stuff, and that's where the ocean is. Well, we got there, and we took a look at the place, and we said, okay, we'll lease it from you. And then we looked at each other and said, where are we going to get the money? And two guys walk up, and they own the Suntan Lotion Company, one of the biggest in the world, and they were based in Miami. They heard what we were trying to do. So they said, we'll front you. We'll underwrite this whole operation here. Let's get going. So who's going to book the bands? I said, I'll book them. I know who's popular. So here I am. I'm 16 years old, and I'm calling the biggest agencies in the world, calling for the Grateful Dead, the Cream, the Yardbirds, Mamas and Papas, you name it.
Wow.
And the guy on the other end is saying, what is this, a joke? How old are you? Who put you up to this and all this? I said, sir, this is real. He said, yeah, it's real. Well, then I tell you what, you tell whoever's giving you the money to send the entire amount for this band, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. They were the opening band for the series. And you send the entire amount with a contract that we'll send you. And if we get that money, we'll send you Frank Zappa. And then you can have anybody else you want in rock and roll.
Hmm.
So sure enough, the Suntan guys wrote out the check. We had Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention and my band, the Blues Image, open up a club, if you want to call it a club, a theater called The Image, T-H-E-E, Image. It's all over the internet. You can see what happened there. It talks about the bands that played there. And we played there with the Cream, with Eric Clapton, the Grateful Dead. And in fact, we became friends with those guys. Eric Burden and the Animals were one of my favorites. And they would all tell us the same thing. The Yardbirds, Jimmy Page said to me, hey, you guys are so great. Why don't you go to L.A. and make it? You can make it in Hollywood. So after that 1 year of being there at that place, we did the same thing again. We jumped in the old, this time we had a little bigger station wagon, and went to L.A., didn't know anybody. We got here, and we had a few nights motel money, and the Whiskey A Go-Go, God bless them, they were kind enough to hire us. And Three Dog Night was playing there, and Chicago, what's called Chicago Transit Authority, CTA, mm-hmm. and us. And we blew the place apart. And then the next week, we got hired again. We played with Steppenwolf and on like that. So before you know it, Atlantic Records showed up and said, we heard the buzz about you guys. We want to see you. And they heard the band and said, we'll sign you. But you're a blues band. And, blues is not on radio. It's not commercial enough. So you got to write some pop songs. I said, yes, sir. We'll work whatever you want, you know. And we went in the studio and cut the first Blues Image album, and it was total blues, and critically acclaimed, but it didn't make any money. The second album, we're about halfway done, and Three Dog Night and Steppenwolf needed that same studio, and the producer that owned it said to me, listen, unless you can play me a pop song, something that sounds like it could be a hit, today, I'm going to have to give the studio away, and you're going to lose your record contract. Yeah, you won't be playing, you won't be on Atlantic Records anymore, I can tell you that, because they don't want any more blues they want to hit. And I said, well, I'll try. So I went into the bathroom, locked the door, meditated for about 10 minutes, and I really thought about it, and also did not think about it. And I came out, and I had Ride Captain Ride pretty much written.
Mm.
Except for the chorus line. And that was Skip Conte, my writing partner, my keyboard player. So that went number three in the nation. And one day, when we have time, I will tell you the story about how the Pentagon called my manager and wanted to know how I knew about the secret spy ship, the USS Pueblo, that sailed out of San Francisco Bay with 73 men on it, the exact lyrics of my song, which was a total coincidence, total, but they, to this day, they don't believe it. Even the crew of the Pueblo still comes up to me and says, man, thank you for writing that song for us. But one day I'll tell you the ins and outs of that. But quickly, after that, we were on tour with Iron Butterfly, and their guitar player quit. So by that time, my band was already having trouble. You know, we're on the road night and day, and they had families and kids, and I didn't. And they got very homesick, and so they said, you know, we might as well split up for a little while here and take some time with our family. So I joined the Iron Butterfly right there at the beginning of 1970 and helped write the album Metamorphosis. That was our first album that we did together.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a 12, 14-minute song called Butterfly Blue that everybody seemed to like. It was a big jam thing. And there it was. We went from playing, from opening for bands to headlining stadiums with Iron Butterfly. We did real well. But the same thing, you know, greedy managers keeping you on the road. Then when you come home, you go into the recording studio, then back out on the road. So that band broke up in 73.
Okay.
Yes, as far as having fun, try touring with Led Zeppelin as your opening band, as your warm-up band.
Wow, that's saying something right
that's
there.
That's what fun is all about.
You bet.
In fact, that poster is on the web at wolfgangsvault.com. You'll see a poster there. If you put in Iron Butterfly, it'll show Led Zeppelin as the opening band. And so we had a lot of fun in the Butterfly. We did real well. And helped a lot of groups get going. Yes, the band Yes got their first shot opening for us, and that launched their career. And from there, it went on to the band breaking up and me getting a call from Jimi Hendrix's drummer, Mitch Mitchell, for Ramatan. And I'll give you a chance to talk right now because I realize I've been talking nonstop. Let me take a breath here and see if you have anything to say.
I'm listening. I'm fine.
You're digging it?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. Because I tell you the truth, even if I wasn't in the music business and I heard the stories and the things that happened to me, I would say, hey, keep going. When Jimi Hendrix's drummer calls you and says, Jimmy passed away, as you know, and we took a vote and we're forming a new band and we want you to be the lead guitar player and the lead singer of it, and we're going to call it Ramatan, and it'll be on the same label you're on now, so there won't be any problems. He said, but I got to tell you, he says, we've got a girl on guitar, so you'll be playing double leads with a girl by the name of April Lawton. And I said, fine, Mitch. I said, hey, being in a band with you, man, my favorite drummer, no problem. So I flew to New York from Miami, and Mitch and I, his wife and my wife, we got a house together. I just got married, 1973. And we had this gigantic house in Long Island with a ballroom in it. And in that ballroom is where we worked up the Ramatan album. And April was an incredible guitarist. She knew jazz, blues, rock, everything. And we went on the road with Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Journey and a lot of progressive bands and did very well. People really loved the band, but April was very frail. She had never been on the road like that before, and she was just constantly, you know, getting sick and breaking down. And so we said, come on, you got to build up to this. We're road hounds here. We know how to do this, but, you know, you better take a little rest. So she took a rest, and while she was resting, the band just kind of split apart a little bit. Mitch and I wanted to start another band, but we figured we'd wait and see what happened with Ramatan. But at that time, I got a call from Carmine Appice from Cactus, and he said, Mike, we want you to play in Cactus while you're waiting for Ramatan to reform. And I said, oh, I love what you guys do, man, all that underground boogie stuff and Tim Bogert on bass. Yeah, man, I'll be right there. So I showed up at the rehearsal, and I got the job. And there I was, now a member of Cactus, when Jeff Beck walks in the room and says to Carmine, just walks up to him and says, hey, Carmine, I want to start a band with you and with Timmy. We'll call it Beck, Bogart, and Appice, BBA.
Hmm.
And I said, "Oh, you got to take my guys away, Jeff? Come on, man. Hey, come on." And at that time, I had just finished co-inventing the guitar talk box, the voice box, later used by Frampton and Joe Walsh and other people, where you put the tube in your mouth and the guitar starts to talk. I just co-invented that, and I said, "Hey, dig this. Watch this." And I started talking with the guitar. And he said, "Oh, my, could I borrow that for just a couple of weeks? I'll bring it right back to you, I promise you." I said, "Okay, yeah, go ahead." Well, 2 years later, I still didn't have it back yet. And the voice box, by then, had been used by Frampton and Walsh and a bunch of other people. And that was okay. But that's a little trivia I wanted you to know, that not too many people know that I was co-inventor of that talk box with that tube.
That's cool.
Were you going to say something?
No, I just thought that was cool because I remember that box.
It was called the Magic Bag when we created it, and it hung over your shoulder with fringe on it. It looked like a kind of like a wine bag or something. And then Custom Electronics bought it, and they put it on the floor as a push button, and that became the Magic Bag, became the guitar talk box. And so, well, what do you want me to do about Cactus if you're on the road with Jeff Beck? And Carmine said, you keep the band. You keep the band up, and when we're done with them, we'll come back. And I didn't feel too good about that, but we did it anyway. And we had Dwayne Hitchings, incredible keyboard player, and a drummer, Donnie Bosberg. And I still could not see calling it Cactus because it wouldn't be fair to the fans who would be coming to a show to see Cactus, and they'd see three guys up there that a power trio that they didn't really know. So we talked to the record company, and they said, "You can change the name of the band to the new Cactus Band." And so we put out an album. It's on Atlantic Records. And it's called Son of Cactus by the new Cactus Band. And we kept the same style, underground boogie, sort of ZZ Top, you know, to compare it to something. And we blew everybody away. I mean, there were groups that didn't even want to tour with us because the band was too good to open. And we kept that band going for a couple of years. And then we realized we're not getting any radio airplay, and without radio airplay, you can't really tour that much. So, and the word commercial made me puke. Somebody said, "Write something commercial." I said, "Excuse me, I gotta go vomit." But we were a blues band, you know. We were an underground boogie blues band. So we said, "Well, let's change the name of the band." So we changed it to The Image. Same three guys, Donnie, Dwayne, and myself, and we were hired by Emerson, Lake & Palmer's record label, Manticore, and we did two albums, The Image and The Image Inside the Triangle. And the reason we called it Inside the Triangle is I lived on the beach in Miami, and that was supposedly where the Bermuda Triangle would start. And I'd have guys come over, Leonard Skinner would come over, Aerosmith would come over, all to go on my boat, go out in Triangle and take a look out there. And so I had so many people that would come visit me there, and we became good friends. June Page and Robert and I, of course, kept our relationship up from when we had toured together. So it was the early 70s to the mid 70s was a lot of fun. And then I got a call from Capitol Records and Capricorn Records, who had the Allman Brothers then, and they wanted me to do a solo album. So I did a solo album called Mike Panera, Isla, and Isla means island. Then I did Mike Panera Forever. That was the second album, and I got a hit off that. It went top 10 in a lot of the big regional markets. It's called Goodnight, My Love. And so there I was. Now I'm on tour as a Mike Panera band, opening for Bob Seger and Journey and Steve Miller, a lot of guys that I liked and that I knew very well. And then at one time had opened for us. I get a call from Alice Cooper, and he says, "Mike, it's 1977. He says, "Mike, listen, I'm changing my band around, and I'd like you to come in and, you know, maybe co-lead it with one of the other guys, with Dwayne from your old band Cactus." So I said, "Gee, Alice, I'd love to do that, but contractually, I have to stay as Mike Panera so I can go out there and promote my albums for the record company. It's part of my contract." And Alice is brilliant, He's a genius. He thought about it for a second. He said, well, I'll tell you what. You can open the shows, and we're talking about 60,000 people and 50,000 people at a time. You can open the shows as Mike Vera Band, play your stuff from your album, promote it, talk about it. Then you take a break, and you come back on stage with me as the lead guitar player of Alice Cooper, with different clothes on and everything, of course. And the record company loved that. All of a sudden, I was playing major stadiums with Alice, and I was sort of the leader of the band, and stayed with Alice for two albums and two world tours, and now we're in the early 80s. This is where we've gotten to at this point. And we're really traveling. I mean, this band was like doing 1,000 miles a night in an airplane, thank God. But Alice was a wonderful guy. I just saw him the other day. In fact, we spent some time together. And he was very nice to me, and he's very nice to everybody, all his fans, very courteous all the time. But boy, was he frail by then, Steve. By 1982, you take a look at some of the pictures, he looks like a little stick, you know, he's just worn out. But he still put on a great show. He still had the big snake, the 9-foot boa constrictor, Angel, put her around his neck on I'm 18, and the kids just loved the show, and we had a good time in that band. And then I said, you know what, it's now the mid-80s. I got to try something that I hear in my heart and in my soul. I hear a sound that I can't explain, but it'd be a combination of Zeppelin, Hendrix, Santana, and Chicago horns, and it's a sound that I can't explain. I just got to go do it. So I took 2 years off to work on that new sound and on that new album. And during that time, I was commissioned by the White House, by Nancy Reagan, to do a campaign called Say No to Drugs for the kids. And have a bunch of rock stars on there who were clean and sober, you know, telling the kids not to do drugs. And that was a real high point in my life. I love that. So I did the first rock documentary, anti-drug rock documentary. It's called Painscape. They showed it in schools. From what I understand, they still show it. And it was a rock and roll documentary with the emphasis being say no to drugs or you'll end up like this. And so that took me to 1988. And in 1988 is when a revelation hit me. Hey, why don't I try stopping drinking and everything else that goes along with that lifestyle? Why don't I practice what I preach here? And so in 1988, December 2nd, I stopped drinking everything, wine, beer, you name it, and some of the other things that were popular at that time, I stopped. Mm-hmm. And my mind got very clear, and I got very grateful that to be where I was, that I was alive, and that I had a wife that loved me, and that I could still play my guitar. And so I got a call from a tour called 30 Years of Rock and Roll. And what they did is they had 10 artists on the tour that were all backed up by one band. And it was like Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night, Tiny Tim, Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees, and all kinds of guys, the Coasters and all that. And each guy would go up and do two or three songs. That's it. Then the next guy would come up. And that really got me going because we were playing huge fairs, 100,000 people, 500,000 people, those kind of gigs. And I said, you know, this is nice, you know, to be able to bring a little happiness and see these people smiling when they hear these old songs that they like and they know the words to. So that brought me into 1990. And I said, but wait a minute, I can do this myself. I don't need all these trucks and trailers and all this equipment. I'll just get a bunch of guys and we'll have a house band and we'll do the same thing. But instead, what I did, Steve, instead of getting a lot of extra artists, I got four guys who had been in some big bands. And lead singer of Rare Earth, Peter Rivera, great drummer. He was one of the only drummers that sang the hits other than Henley and a few other people. And we went out as, we called ourselves the Classic Rock All-Stars. And from time to time, we'd have guest artists appear with us from very big bands. And that lasted from 1992 until 2010.
Gee.
That's how long that lasted.
And good
that's,
run.
That's where most people got to see us playing, you know, at the fairs, outdoors, and doing our hits, you know, doing the from Inagata de Vida to Green. Oh, my keyboard player was from Sugarloaf, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
To Green Eyed Lady. Quite an eclectic mix of songs, but there was something in there for everybody, and they loved the band. And then that band broke up because of illness and death in the family and stuff like that. So for the last 3 years, I put together a new Classic Rock All-Stars, and that has Goldie McJohn, the original founding member and keyboardist of Steppenwolf. I've got Prescott Niles, the original bass player of The Knack, and Albert Bouchard, the original founding member and drummer of Blue Oyster Cult.
Awesome.
And then, yeah, and then myself. And that's how we go out. We go out and play as the new Classic Rock All-Stars. And right now, I'm in the middle of doing my next solo album, which will be called The Present. And I've been doing a lot of film scoring and stuff like that, and even writing some films and some documentaries. And what you'll see from me pretty soon here, probably in the next 2 weeks, and you're the first person to know about this, is I will be on a internet station called iRock,
mm-hmm.
iROCKE.com. And I will be on there with a weekly reality show with all my buddies, Nugent, Alice Cooper, everybody, hopefully, coming on, and we'll be jamming, and we'll be talking about the old days and road stories, and show some vintage footage, and also play live as well. So that's my new project. That's where I've landed after all these years. Live music.
Sounds like you've had a wonderful career. Yeah, I mean, just amazing. Just the people you've played with.
I'm very blessed to be doing what I love to do, and the only thing that I know how to do.
Well, we'll be looking for you on that iRock show. If you can have somebody email me, maybe Sherry or somebody can email me and remind me of that.
Sure
I'd love to check that out.
Sure will.
You have just blown me away with all this information, and it's gonna. I'm gonna have to listen to this 3 or 4 times before I catch it all. But you've just it's amazing, and I really appreciate you calling me. So that's your new project that you have, and that's what we can look forward to seeing from you here in the next couple of weeks.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that, and it was wonderful talking with you.
Yes, sir.
Talking to you. And it was wonderful meeting your wife on the phone, too. She sounds lovely.
She's very nice.
Hopefully we'll be around your town sometime soon, and you can come see the band play.
I'd love to. If you'll give me just a second to go over my credits and everything, and I also would like to thank you for what you do for Animal Rescue in the greater Los Angeles area. Like I was telling you, Ray Aroma's Rescue, Bobby Kimball's Rescue, you know, all those guys, Operation Blankets of Love. I really appreciate, even though I'm in Kentucky, I really appreciate what you're doing out there for that.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, there were a lot of other great bands on that show from Toto and Chicago and from Deep Purple and, you know, a lot of good bands were, individuals from those bands were on that show. Lawrence from Paul McCartney's Wings, and so I give credit to all of them as well for a great night. And well, we raised money for puppies and dogs that need medical treatment and their shelters and all that, and it was a wonderful night. So thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. Actually, I had 4 or 5 artists on there for advertising that show. I was trying to get you at the time, and we just ran out of time, and so I pursued you after that, and that's how we got together. I really appreciate your time. All those guys were great. They were great artists. They were great guests on the show, and I couldn't ask for any better than what you've just given me.
Well, I appreciate that, and listen, anytime you or anyone in your area there that's bonafide, that's for real, has a charity that needs money, whether it be for children or for shelter or whatever, you call me and my band, and we'll be there, no charge. and maybe by then we'll have it up on iRock and we can charge a penny for a view, and we might get we might be able to raise a few pennies there for charity. But count on us. Anytime anything like that comes, you just call me and I'll be there.
I appreciate that. If you'll let me go through my credits, I'll let you go. I need to let everybody know that Stars on Tap is brought to you by LexingtonBroadcasting.com for the best in top 40 country music on the internet. I'd like to thank our co-producer, Miss Rhea Roma of Rhea's Rescues in Los Angeles, for her tireless work in animal rescue and co-producing this show. I'd also like to thank my wife, Betty, who's our tech advisor. Without Betty, I couldn't pull this off. I'd like to thank Jimmy Lawson at SpaceCoastIRadio.com out of Merritt Island, Florida, for playing this show and a couple others that I do, and we really appreciate Jimmy, and that's SpaceCoastIRadio.com out of Merritt Island, Florida. I'd also like to mention OperationBlanketsOfLove.org, where if you have sheets, linen, blankets, towels, anything that an animal can snuggle up to and get warm with and get off a cold concrete floor, they're easier to adopt, and please do that instead of throwing it away or whatever. And I'd also like to mention caninerescue.org. I believe that's Bobby Kimball and his wife's organization. And I'd also like to thank God for the opportunity of being here today to speak with Mike about his colorful and illustrious past in the music business.
Amen, brother. I appreciate that. It was wonderful talking with you. And all those causes that you listed are absolutely bona fide. Bobby's wife, Jasmine, played a very big part in this. And she really went out of her way. I mean, it was a wonderful event. Everyone had a good time. It was streamed on the internet, but not too many people knew about it.
I saw it.
But we'll be there. We'll be there for you. And please, keep up the good work. We love what you do.
I appreciate you, Mike. I'm your host, Steve Martin. Until next time, enjoy the music.